Smuts Up is a part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
We usually say that the Smuts Up podcast is a bad show made by idiots, and that you probably shouldn't listen to it. We also usually say that the Smuts Up podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease, except for boredom. And even that's up for debate. We also usually advise for you to proceed with caution and listen at your own risk. But this disclaimer does not apply to the episode which you are about to hear, which we encourage you to listen to and share with as many people as you can. It's an important conversation, and we're excited to be presenting it. So fuck yeah.
All of this being said, the topic of sexual violence does come up in this episode, so if today doesn't feel like the day that you want to hear a discussion about that and, you know, confronting that issue, then that is totally cool. This is a content warning on that front. So please take care of yourself and enjoy the episode if you choose to listen to it. Much love.
I put a D20 in my mouth.
Oh yeah.
I put a D20 in my mouth. I put a D20 in my mouth.
Smuts Up! You're listening to the Smuts Up podcast. When you're here, your stepfamily. How's it going, Deep?
I'm doing just fine, actually. We had a, especially after now, like, just fresh off our interview with Zach B. Had a lot of insightful knowledge that he imparted on to us. And I know it's over dramatic to say, but I feel kind of enlightened, you know?
Yeah, it was just really cool of Zach to come and share the information that he's been able to put together and his work surrounding consent and understanding and educating people about consent. So we really appreciate him taking the time to talk with us. I was lucky enough to be at a class that Zach taught, and it was a really fun experience, a very, charismatic speaker and everything. So we're so excited to be able to share our conversation with him, with all of you. So thank you so much for listening. Do you have any thoughts before we get rolling into it here?
Yes, actually. This was kind of a topic I approach with kind of like emptying my mind, as much to say, as in one of those where it's like you kind of go into like, I understand this, but do you really? So, you know, kind of let your mind be opened, and he'll have a lot of insight for you.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of a good way of thinking about this topic in general, like this idea of like opening your mind to be willing to listen to what other people are telling you about what they want and, you know, how to make that happen in an ethical way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's one of those where it seems like it sounds like it's easy, but there's a lot that goes into it and a lot that is still embedded into our society that we may not even be like aware of. I got a few of those like aha moments from this. So I hope it happens with other people as well.
So if anybody has any questions or comments or anything, where can they send their stuff? Or if they have stories that they'd like to share, or if they have topics that they'd like us to discuss, where can they get a hold of us?
You can get a hold of us at smutsup69@gmail.com. And you can even message me on Instagram at smutsup69. Please, especially with this topic, I want to hear like a lot of people's opinions on it. So don't be shy. If you have something to say, I want to hear about it and maybe read it on air, but I'll leave that up to your discretion.
Yeah, absolutely. In this interview, and we talk a lot about the idea of this being a conversation. And so, yeah, we definitely do encourage you to have this conversation with us. If you have thoughts about consent, or if you have questions or comments or anything like that, please reach out. We'll also have a link to our guest's information too. So if you have any questions for him, you can reach out to him as well.
Excellent. Without further ado, let's get into it.
Let's get into it here. The five pillars of consent with Zach V.
Deep penetration.
Deep penetration.
I put a D20 in my mouth.
Appropriate.
Deep penetration, but only if you want it.
Only as deep as you want it.
Only as deep as you want it.
All right, that's enough.
So fine.
So hello, we are here today with Zach to have a very important conversation about consent.
Hi.
How's it going?
Thank you. I am well. I'm doing, you know what? I'm here to talk about consent, which it doesn't excite a lot of people, but I get pretty fired up about it. So no, I'm doing well. I'm doing great. Thanks. And thanks for having me.
So if you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of an intro about yourself, like what you're into and what you're up to.
Yeah, what I'm into, what I'm up to, man, that could take a while. No, so my name is Zach Budd, officially now LMSW. I've graduated and got my license as a master social worker. And I live in the Houston, Texas area. I am a social worker. That's kind of my day job. Side projects, among other things, is I'm a polyamory and kink sort of educator. Started off as a consent educator. I've been teaching consent actively now. Oh gosh, since 2016, 2017, somebody do the math. I don't know how many years it is, but a while. And that's kind of, I think, how we ended up crossing paths is whenever I, you know, go somewhere to talk about consent or do some sort of education, whether it be for polyamory or some kink group or something like that. Every time I do it, somebody asks me to do it again. And that's kind of, for me, that's exciting because it means there are people that actually want to hear this stuff and want to have these conversations. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. Other things that I do, NCSF, the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, I am their Gulf Coast advocate. And so I do some traveling with them to talk about consent and things like that. And they've got a really cool project that they have been working on for years that is kind of coming to fruition where they've been sort of updating the definition of consent via the ALI, the American Law Institute, which is a whole big thing you can find on the NCSF website, which is ncsfreedom.org. But yeah, that's basically it, other than possibly traveling to a conference or convention near you and speaking sometime soon. That's basically what I've got going on right now.
Very cool. Fuck yeah. So how did you first become interested in the work that you're doing right now?
So, I mean, I got interested in stuff because I am, you know, both a kinky and poly person and just kind of interacted in those circles for a while. And the topic of consent just kind of came up a lot. At one point, I was sort of a facilitator and a leader in the local polyamory community here in Houston. And, you know, that type of thing came up a little bit. The other thing was, you know, same thing with kind of kink stuff. I'm not saying that people in polyamorous or kink sort of interactions are better at consent. We just have to have those conversations more. And so it tends to come up. It was something that, you know, myself, I'm sort of a nerd and a geek. So when I'm interested in something, I do a lot of research about it. And I started researching it just for myself personally. It was very interesting and fascinating to me. What eventually happened is as I was researching it, I kind of happened upon one fateful evening, as they say, where I heard some conversations about that kind of came up among some people, particularly about the topic of consent, that, to put it mildly, really pissed me off. Just the way that people who I wouldn't say I like was friends with or anything, but that circles I kind of travel in, the way people thought about consent angered me to a point that I realized I couldn't just research it for myself, that people needed to be educated. And it occurred to me, most people haven't sat through any actual education, let alone formal education or training about consent, and not just what it is and, you know, getting it, but more so the actual practical application of consent to consent principles. So that's kind of how it got started. And like I said, I've been doing it ever since. So yeah.
So for people who are listening right now that are thinking, what's the big deal? No means no. I understand consent. Let's start getting into some of the like meat and potatoes of this issue and some of the nuances that go into it. Because I do think that there's a lot more there that people might just not think about maybe until they get the opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny because when I started doing this stuff, like went from just being somebody who was researching this to wanting to present this and have conversations and get people to invite me to their parties and their groups and say, hey, before you guys, you know, descend into debauchery, let's talk about consent for a little bit. It was a really, really hard sell because, you know, that's a mood killer and people don't want to talk about consent. They want to, you know, get hammered, smoke a little bit and just have adult fun or whatever. And it's interesting you mentioned the phrase no means no. It's one of the things I talk about all the time. No means no. I mean, you could almost say it was a good start if you were to start somewhere, but it's not enough, and it never really has been. Because if you think about it, if you ever have to utter the phrase no means no, you've already had a consent violation. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that we can talk about that later. It basically sets the bar way too low, and I've got some great examples of what I mean by that. So yeah, no means no is an interesting thing that people used to kind of rely on a lot. And the problem is, for those of us, you know, in the consent educator realm, we know that's not enough. I mean, rather than a no means no, you kind of need more of a focus on what we would call, you know, a positive affirmation, or rather an enthusiastic yes. So, yeah, but yeah, no means no is kind of a, I'm not going to call it a pet peeve. I'm going to say it's like, you know, we've kind of improved on that. And this is the problem, you know, because people think, you know, what's the big deal? No means no. And it's like, yeah, I have seen ways that people manipulate themselves around the fact that somebody might say no, and that itself is a problem. So, yeah. But sure, we can jump into meat and potatoes, however you want to do it.
Well, when I first met you at your class, it was surrounding the five pillars of consent. Would you like to talk about what those are?
Sure, absolutely. So the five pillars of consent is based on an acronym that I kind of created on the research that I was doing. And it was really just trying to find a simple, easy way to remember parts of consent that are important. And I call it the five pillars because in my opinion, and I've done some research on this, I've tested it. I used to say that I'm not an expert, but I've talked to the experts. So I've talked to attorneys, I've talked to therapists. Now I've become a trained therapist, you know, doctors, you name it, you know, plenty of assault victims, to just sort of break down, you know, where does this consent thing come from? And what are the sort of the components of it? What is, you know, if you get all the way down to the bare bones of what consent is, what is it? And so the acronym I came up with is the word invest, you know, and it sounds like a financial thing, but it's just literally invest. And the only reason I use that word in particular, it has no other meaning other than the acronym itself, which are the five pillars. The first one being IN, which is informed. The second one, the V, is involuntary. The third, E, is enthusiastic. The fourth is the S, which stands for specific. And then the last is T, for timed. So informed, voluntary, enthusiastic, specific, and timed are what I call the five pillars of consent. And I'm sure you're going to want to break those down a little bit more. And so we can do that.
You read my mind. Do we have any questions, Deep, before we press on?
Hi, I've been here the whole time.
You are here. Hello. I'm sorry. We did a bad job.
You didn't get it.
You're here.
You didn't intro me, and I was like, that's cool. I don't, I'm honestly here, just like, listening.
I'll fix that in post.
But, no, like, honestly, if I'm being honest, we always say, like, we are strong components for consent. Me personally, probably not really sure what that really necessarily entails and means. So I am just here as a student of life, and I just want to, like, learn more.
You know what? I can appreciate that, because I can't tell you how many people I've run across who say that they're strong components of consent and have no idea what they're talking about. Like, I would prefer the, you know, I'm not sure what that means, as opposed to just saying what sounds like the right thing to say. Like, that is, to me, that's preferable, because it's, you know, the beginning of wisdom is admitting what you don't know, right? So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think there's another issue, too, which is that, you know, ideas about this stuff are going to continue to evolve. So the things that we talk about today, you know, gosh, in 15 years, there might be other ideas about it. So this is stuff that's continuously evolving. These conversations and stuff are necessary and need to be had. And so, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there, too.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Okay. So, hell yeah. So let's get into IN, informed.
Yeah, yeah. So it's important to keep in mind as we talk about this, that when I teach consent, yes, I come at it from the perspective of somebody who's both polyamorous and kinky. But for me, the more important thing is that I firmly believe that consent is involved in every human interaction. Even this conversation we're having now, you know, we're all kind of here of our own free will. I hope no one's pointing a gun at us saying that we've got to be here for this. So for me, every single human interaction, whether it be an interaction via social media, to a handshake, to sitting in a room having a conversation, has a consent component to it. And so I approach it from that way. So starting with that first pillar, informed, it seems pretty basic, but you kind of have to know what you're consenting to. Consent doesn't happen in a vacuum. Oh, sure, I'll go along with whatever you say, not knowing what it is. That's not actually consent. You aren't aware of what you're consenting to, and you can't give an enthusiastic yes or an affirmative to something if you don't know what it is. Not to mention the fact, can you imagine how truly screwy the world would be if people went around consenting to things before they knew what they are? I mean, there might be some examples, you know, you'll hear about a soldier has to accept a mission before they're told what it is because it's so top secret. I mean, yeah, okay, but there's, you know, obviously exigent circumstances, but in the reality, when it comes to just about anything, you have to know what you're consenting to. But part of that is not just know what it is, but know what the potential risks and benefits are. So for example, one of the examples I always use when I'm teaching is hugs. I'm a natural introvert. I'm not a big hugger unless I know people. And I grew up down here in the South. I hang around polyamorous people. I'm around a lot of people that like to hug a lot. And so one of the things that I've had to sort of advocate for is, look, if I don't know you, I don't want to be hugged. I have the right to that. But if someone comes up to me and asks for a hug, I'm more likely to say, okay, if they ask, which is awesome. The problem is that I need to know what the risks are. So, for example, if you come up and say, Zach, can I have a hug? Sure. But if I don't know that you just tested positive for COVID, I have not been properly informed and I can't consent to that risk if I don't know what it is. So part of informing somebody of what they're consenting to is making them aware of the potential benefits and the potential risks of that action before they consent to it. It's kind of like before you take your medications that you pick up from the pharmacy, they've got that book they staple to the bag because it's got all that information in it. And they tell you that the potential benefits outweigh the potential risks, but they have to let you know what they all are. That's legal. That's just required. It's the same thing when it comes to any form of consent. You know, if I go to shake your hand, I have the right to know if you've been gutting fish before you shake my hand. You know, otherwise you haven't properly informed me and I don't have the opportunity to either opt in or opt out of potentially getting fish guts all over my palm. I have the right to know that. So, yeah, that's kind of the way I look at the informed thing. You have to be made aware of the potential risks and the potential benefits.
All right. Fuck yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Cool. I love it when this stuff makes sense. That's the reason why I do this, that is to make it make sense.
All right. So let's see. The next letter in the acronym is E, correct?
No, it's V. V for voluntary. Yes.
I know English.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. Hey, literally, no kidding. I have it written down in front of me and I created the damn acronym. So it is all right. I don't mind at all. I like the fact that you're trying to skip ahead to E, and I'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, so the V stands for voluntary, and voluntary also sounds obvious, particularly when we're talking about consent. But I think people kind of get lost in the practical application of things being voluntary or of volition. Essentially, for something to be voluntary, for someone's consent to be voluntary, they have to have been free to say no to whatever is being sort of proposed to them and to have that no respected. Now, I say that and I have to give examples because it sometimes is more abstract than it really seems. But for example, and I hate to go to, you know, dark times, but it paints the picture here. You know, we are all somewhat familiar with the story of Bill Cosby. You know, even though he's now out of jail, he was convicted. He was a terrible person that had a bad habit of mistreating people. But what he was doing was drugging his victims. In other words, basically incapacitating them some way artificially to get around the fact that they might say no. So, yes, they didn't say no. By the way, that said no means no thing. He was just drugging them so they couldn't say no. The problem with that is that they weren't opting into it. They just weren't opting out of it because they couldn't. Now, in his mind, apparently that was okay. But see, that's a problem. That is inherently a consent violation. If you're trying to basically disinhibit somebody from saying no or keeping them from saying no. So, you know, whenever I talk to people that are going to various functions and whatnot, if you have to get drunk before you consent to something, you're technically not consenting to it. What you're doing is keeping yourself from saying no to something that you would have said no to. The way I look at it is if you have to get drunk or high or whatever to interact with me, I don't want to interact with you at all, you know, because I can't trust you to be okay with this sober if you have to do this drunk. And there's a bunch of historical reasons I can go into about that. The bottom line is, for those who don't know, I'm a big black guy who lives in America, and I don't always get the benefit of the doubt when there's a difference of opinion on whether or not somebody agreed to do something with me when they were drunk. So I don't take that chance. If you cannot agree to be with me sober, I'm not touching you drunk, period, end of story. So that's kind of the way I look at that. So, and that's where that voluntary sort of part comes from. And I tell people all the time, I don't mind if people want to interact with each other or have fun or play and whatnot and have a glass of wine, have a drink, have a beer or something like that. My request is that they negotiate before they medicate, you know, negotiate, agree to what you're going to do sober, then you can play drunk later. That's fine. But don't get hammered before you're even able to agree to something, because that I have a fundamental issue with that. Not the least of which is that we know all of these recreational substances are designed to reduce inhibitions. And those inhibitions are there for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Did I ruin the mood there?
I know sometimes I think this goes back to the phrase too about, like, you know, I can't trust your yes unless I know you're comfortable telling me no too.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Later on when I talk about in my workshop, when I talk about building a consent culture, I try to encourage people to be grateful for someone telling them no. Like, the proper response to the word no is thank you. Because someone telling you no is basically telling, one, they're telling you the truth. They're being honest with you. Two, they're telling you sort of it, or implying it, that they trust you to be okay with them telling you no, which means they feel like you're a safe person. That's a compliment in a society where people are terrified of saying no to the wrong person. I mean, let's be real here. We live in a world today where people have literally been murdered for saying no to the wrong person. You know, I mean, there are parts in the world, and not, and by the way, we live in a pretty patriarchal society ourselves, you know, where, and I hate to be too gendered about this, but people who were assigned female at birth have been raped, murdered, God knows what else, acid attacks and whatnot, just for daring to say no to the proposal of someone else. Now, we would like to think that's changing a little bit, but I mean, there are still, you ask most people you know who, you know, appear female, how safe they feel saying no to somebody they don't know. I mean, it creates a lot of stress, and there's a reason for that. People have been in danger over it. So if someone says no to you, they're giving you a compliment. The proper response is thank you, you know. And then the other thing about the voluntary thing, again, someone has to be free to say no and have that no respected. This is why no means no is not enough, because there have been so many examples of people sort of trying to circumvent the fact that somebody might say no. I know of a case that happened in Oklahoma where basically a young teenage girl was drunk and needed a ride home. And of course, there was a very helpful young teenage boy willing to take her home. And she flat out said she didn't want anything to go on. She just wanted a ride home. Well, of course, something happened on the way home. Fast forward a little bit, it all gets to court, and the young man's defense was that, well, she was too intoxicated to say no. And the problem was that actually was enough to acquit him. Because the way the law was written, the law was based on the fact that in order for a violation, I think the charge was oral sodomy, but I think for a violation to have taken place, the victim had to have said no, and the perpetrator have ignored that no. And his defense's argument was, well, she was too drunk to say no, so therefore the law doesn't apply. When that
what a piece
decision,
of shit.
Right? Sorry. When that decision came out, no, it's an absolute piece of shit. It was a shit decision. It was a shit law. But if you think about it, when that decision came out, myself and some other consent educators, you know, we were going apoplectic. How the hell is, well, she was too drunk to say no, literally a defense? And I had to have a legal analyst explain it to me. And they were saying, listen, the way this law is written, it's based on a no means no model, which means you have to have the presence of a no in order for there to be a consent violation. What the appellate court in that case was basically saying was to the legislature, you need to change the writing of this law because it's based on a no means no model. And this is the shit that can happen if you base things on a no means no model. So rather than the absence or the presence or absence of a no, how about the presence or absence of an enthusiastic yes? In other words, instead of assuming it's a yes unless someone flat out says no, how about assume it's a no unless someone gives you an enthusiastic yes? Then you can't circumvent the fact that somebody might say no. You are assuming the no unless you get a very clear communicated hell yes to something, which is what I mean by raising the bar. So that's why earlier I said no means no is not enough, and it never has been. It sets the bar too low. We literally have people who are just trying to get around the fact that somebody might say no. Not to harp on this too much, I'll give you another example. Any person who has ever been anywhere out in public and someone just grabbed them by the ass without saying anything to them or asking, they're literally doing something to you before you have the right to say no to it. It's the definition of a coercion. It's consent.
Yeah. It's super uncool. Yeah. Don't touch people right. without permission, everybody. Yeah. Please just don't.
Right? Now, here's
keep
the thing.
Keep your goddamn hands to yourself.
And we all have the exact same sentiment. It is wrong. It's fucked up. Don't touch people. You don't have permission to touch people, regardless of what they're wearing or where you are. I don't care if you're at Pride and they're walking around in a jock strap. Don't fucking grab somebody by the dick. That's not cool, right? We're all sharing that sentiment. Now, can we all say we probably know places and people that have happened to? Yes, because it's happened all the time.
It happens that to is me again. Sometimes.
Yeah. So again, well, you know, and literally it's just, well, look at the way they're dressed. Yeah, but the way they're dressed doesn't mean they consented to you grabbing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, putting on an outfit doesn't mean that you want a bunch of strangers to come paw at you. It just exactly. means you want to wear an outfit, right?
Yeah. I mean, for fuck's sake, you know, most. You know, 19, 20 year old boys know that just because you're in the strip club doesn't mean you can paw at the goddamn strippers. Like, it's not that hard to understand that what someone is wearing isn't a blatant invitation, you know, and yet people do stuff like this all the time. And if you think about it, what they're doing is trying to get around the fact, well, they may say no if I ask to grab them, so I'm just going to grab them and then do something like, I hope that was okay. Like, do you ever hear them say that? I hope it was okay to do that. And the answer is no, shithead. You don't get to do something okay. and then ask if it was okay afterwards. By definition, that's a coercion. You're trying to keep somebody from telling you no. And then the last example I'll give of this, you ever hear that saying, it's better to ask for forgiveness and permission?
Yeah.
People say that all the time. You know, I had a spouse one time used to think that all the time. If I just buy it before asking, then he can't say no. But if you think about that, that is literally plotting to circumvent the fact that they might say no to it. So you just do it hoping that it's, you know, they'll just let it go because you already did it. It's the definition of coercion. You're trying to get around the fact that they might say no. And this is why I point these things out, is people need to realize this shit happens in our culture and society every single day. It's not just sex. It's not just physical touch or some sort of intimacy. It's everything from a handshake to touching someone's hair to whatever. It is all kinds of stuff in all kinds of ways. This stuff permeates the culture we live in, which is why we don't live in a consent culture. By the way, this is why I'm so passionate about this shit, because it comes up, I'm not kidding, literally every day. Literally every day, you know, and you can see it everywhere. And lo and behold, that was just two out of the five pillars. So are we warmed up yet? Are we comfortable?
Because yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for pointing all that out. I do think that, as you said, it comes up in so many different situations and so many times, and it's not just in spaces where, you know, we're thinking about consent, you know, we're like kink spaces or whatever, like it, I'm getting impassioned. It should be something that we bring into all of our interactions, because it's ethical and it's respectful and it's the best way to operate. So yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And I really, like I said, I really respect and admire the passion, because again, when I started trying to talk to people about consent, I got a lot of yawns and ho-hums and, well, that's boring, because people don't want to talk. I mean, I'm a sexuality educator. When people hear sexuality educator, they want me to tell them about the latest sex toy or some new technique. Not, yeah. So here are the five pillars of consent. That just really tends to, for some people, sort of darken the mood, which I don't understand, but you know, it's not easy to have these conversations with people because it's not the fun stuff, right? And yet this is the stuff that we get to do in order to make sure that we can really enjoy the fun stuff. So that's why I'm so passionate about this. And yeah, like I said, this stuff comes up in all human interactions, and I don't think we are consciously aware of it, and that's why we have so many problems with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, it, you know, it is fascinating too, as you noted, like, because when we're talking about these issues, we're also talking about power dynamics, right? And power dynamics are sexy, and they can be sexy, right? So like, I don't think it has to necessarily be an unsexy conversation at all. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. And power dynamics are great. You know, I've been in several of them, and I'm still in several of them. The key though is, you know, the person with the power has to really exercise some caution. I cannot tell you the number of situations I've seen where somebody in some position of power or even perceived power, you know, just was going along with something because they felt like somebody was on board. And what was really happening was this person was afraid to tell them no, which again, sounds like, well, that's their problem. Yeah. But again, we live in a society where people are terrified of saying no, you know, and I usually go out of my way to encourage someone to say no. I'll flat out say, hey, I want to suggest something. And by the way, no is a perfectly acceptable answer. You know, and then ask the question, but let them know it is okay to say no. Like, in fact, if no is what you're feeling, that's what I want you to say, because we are not built that way. We're not built to think that no is an okay thing to say to people. We're taught in the sandbox that it's rude to say, no, I don't want to share my truck with somebody. You know, I'm playing with my Tonka truck and some new kid comes on. Well, no, I don't want to play with him. Well, now you're being rude and you're not sharing and you're not being friendly and you're not being nice. And all these things we've been taught about the word no, despite the fact that that is literally how I felt at the time. And I kind of have the right to be like, no, I don't want to do that. Or no, I don't want to hug my scary Aunt Janie. You know, well, but, and, you know, you laugh, and most people do, but think about that. That is literally one of the primary vectors of transmission for herpes 1, is some little kid being forced to kiss or hug their scary aunt who happened to have a cold sore without wanting them to. And I always try to encourage parents, listen, teach your kids bodily autonomy, because if you teach them to say, no, I don't want to be touched when they're 4 and 5, it's easier for them to do that when they're 14 and 15. Right. But we don't think about that. We want our kids to be friendly and outgoing and nice to everybody. And we'd certainly want them to let every terrifying adult that they've never met hug and kiss them without realizing the danger we're doing and what we're sort of training them to do, which is to understand that there's some people you're just not allowed to say no to, you know, and my gosh, being in a power dynamic situation where you think you're not allowed to say no to a power figure, that's never created a problem in the society before, has it? I mean, you know, right?
Yeah.
And then, and lo and behold, here we are. And you've got people like me who are consent educators saying, please let little Jimmy play by himself in the sandbox with his truck and stop fucking with him over it. He has the right to say no. you know. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about E.
Yes. Yes. Let's talk about E. So I loved that earlier you jumped to it because I don't have a favorite of these pillars. I literally think if you take any one of these away, your consent is not nearly as solid. But the E in the invest model is really a game changer. This is the definition for, or E is actually for enthusiasm. And I tell people, I want enthusiasm in people's consent. I want people to be enthusiastic when they consent to something. I go back to the example of people offering to hug me. And like I say, I'm more likely to say yes if someone asks rather than if they just come up and reach for me. So if someone asks if they can hug me and I kind of cringe and hunch my shoulders and say, well, okay, if you have to, I always ask people, how much do you want to hug somebody who responds like that? And if you do still want to hug that person who's cringing and literally backing up, what does that say about you? You know, why wouldn't you want someone to be enthusiastic about their interactions with you? Let's say it has to do with a handshake or a first kiss on a date. If someone says, well, okay, I guess, I mean, does that build a lot of confidence in their desire to want to be kissed by you, let alone whatever else you may be suggesting? You know, and then the question I might have asked this when you first saw me looks, but I always ask people, if we're talking about sex or sexuality, you know, have you ever had a truly mesmerizing, earth-shattering, mind-blowing, you know, spine-tingling, universe-creating orgasm when enthusiasm wasn't part of the equation? If you have, I always tell people, contact me because I got questions. Like, I want to know how do you half-ass your way to the greatest experiences of your life, sexual or otherwise? Like, I mean, who just stumbles onto, you know, something that is truly worth writing home about? And so my question is always, why wouldn't you want enthusiasm to your responses? You know, if you ask somebody the question and, you know, your response is, well, they didn't say no. So, hey, green light. I don't understand that line of thinking. Like, I want somebody to be fired up about potentially having sex with me or kissing me or going to dinner with me or whatever. You know, if someone wants to hug me, you know, and I say, okay, you know, that's usually my way of saying no. So what I tell people is basically this. If you ask somebody, you know, to do something or ask them for a question, you're trying to get their consent for something, anything short of a very clearly communicated hell yes, by definition is a no. That raises the bar, right? Because now it's not just, well, they didn't say no, so I can do whatever I want. It's no. She said hell yes. It's on. You know, if you go to your partner, and I love those Roman commercials where they're talking about, hey, you know, they're trying to find these funny ways of saying, hey, do you want to do our taxes or do you want to go do laundry? Or what was that one couple that said honey mustard and that was their signal to go have sex? You know, when you're that excited, like when it's like, hell yes, what are you waiting for? Let's go right now. If you get that response, that's what you want out of your interactions with other human beings. You don't want people that, you know, would rather be eating cold pizza. You know, you don't want somebody's response to be, well, I mean, I was going to trim my nails, but yeah, okay, sure, why not? Like, you know, you want enthusiasm in your responses. And it should kind of look ridiculous, you know, because that's how you know for sure. And as ridiculous as it sounds, I always tell people, think about the times you have heard of any sort of either misunderstanding or consent violation or something like that. And ask yourself if 100% hell yes enthusiasm was in sort of injected into that equation, would that sort of problem still have happened? You know, for example, Bill Cosby, you can't drug somebody into giving you a hell yes enthusiastic consent, you know, certainly not without coercion. And I maintain that coercion isn't enthusiastic. You know, getting around someone's no isn't, you know, waiting for them to give you an absolutely hell yes enthusiastic, you know, consent. So it's sort of my way of raising the bar. So for me, the E in the invest process, the enthusiasm, is how we basically completely erase the no means no thing and say, not only are we going to not do no means no, we're going to demand a yes. More importantly, we're going to demand a very clearly communicated, enthusiastic hell yes. And anything shorter of that is a no. Maybe means no. I always tell people this. I think I got that from the burner community. Yes means yes, no means no, and maybe means no. You know, okay, well, sort of. All right, that means no too. And I challenge people to call each other on it. You know, I mean, I've had that happen with a partner of mine once. You know, literally, she kind of, you know, did the whole suggesting of sex thing. And I was like, well, you know, I'm tired, but sure. She's like, nah, babe, never mind. That doesn't sound like consent. And of course, at that point, I had ruined it. I was like, no, wait a minute. No, I'm down. She's like, no. I don't want to feel like I'm coercing you. So I kind of got my own medicine thrown at me, which I'm okay with because I'm a consent educator and I want to be held to account for the things that I teach. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you don't realize how many times you kind of just go along to get along. And that is, again, as a big black dude in America, I'm trying to minimize misunderstandings. I don't want somebody going along with something because they're afraid of what the alternative is. I want somebody that's 100% down and in it, you know, all in, ready to go for it. That's what you're looking for when it comes to enthusiasm. And so that's all I ask is for people to have that in all the interactions is that enthusiastic consent.
Hell yeah.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for right there. Hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is the part where I challenge people that tell me, you know, this all sounds like a lot of work and it ruins the mood. And occasionally I'll get some, I guess you can call them man. I was going to say gentleman, but that wouldn't work. There's always like, yeah, but you know, I get people that don't want me to ask and I tell them, well, good luck. I don't live in a world where I can just go around doing whatever I want without asking people if it's okay and have that work out for me. Like I don't expect the benefit of the doubt. And again, why would you do that? You know, don't you want people? It should be awesome to have people say, hell yes, let's go do the thing that's on your mind right now. Like that is sexy. You know, people that think mm-hmm. that asking for consent isn't sexy. You get somebody that just says a hell fucking yes. What on earth are you waiting for? That is fucking hot. I don't care who you are. That is really, really hot. And I don't understand why people aren't looking for that more in their interactions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. How about we take a quick break? There's a break time activity that we always do on the Lexicult show called the Bibliomancy Break. And so is going to be both on the Lexicult and the Smuts Up RSS feeds, I figured we could go ahead and do that.
Awesome.
This is a chance for you to ask the Oracle any question you would like, and I will roll some dice and figure out what book we're going to use, and then I will conduct the divination.
Oh, wow. This ought to be fun.
I have a story of one of these bibliomancies. I asked the Oracle last year, like, hey, where is my IRS check? The book you rolled, you couldn't find the book.
So that's right. It was lost. So the book was gone, and so was the check. So I
decided that's a definite answer.
Wow, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
All right, Zach, well, you can ask the Oracle anything you'd like.
Oh, geez. I can ask the Oracle anything I'd like. Well, so down here in Houston, we just survived the hottest day in July on record. Yesterday, the temperature got up to 105. The heat index has got as high as 117. So, yeah, me and the dog were inside under a fan all day. So I'm wondering, dear Oracle, is the fever going to break in the Houston area? More importantly, are we going to get through this hurricane season without getting that wet?
All right. Let's see what book we're going to use here. All right. It's going to be book one from table one, The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Nice.
Right next to me. The Art of War by Sun Tzu. That's a good one.
Uh-oh. Yes, one of my favorites for sure. Okay. Eris, somewhere. Will the folks down in Houston get a break from the heat, and will they be able to get through this hurricane season without things getting too wet and wild? All right. The king of Wu inquired of Sun Wu, saying, "Our forces have pushed deep into the critical terrain and have passed by many of the enemy's cities and towns. Our supply lines have been cut off and stopped. If we try to go back now, there is no way we will make it. If we try to feed off the enemy, he is sure to put up a fight. What then are we to do?" Okay, thank you.
Maybe it's where my brain goes, but yeah, just being invaded and cut off. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like...
Oh, boy.
I kind of want to buy a vowel. Yeah, I'm like, what? Yeah.
Can I get a mulligan on that one?
Yeah, I was like, okay, all right.
Okay,
sure.
All right. Well, very cool. Does anybody have any thoughts about that before we dive back into consent?
I mean, I'm sure I've got lots of thoughts, but no, I'm going to let that one go.
Okay. Fair enough.
I put a D20 in my mouth.
All right. So getting back to our consent conversation, I believe we are at the letter S. Is that correct?
We are. Yeah. Yes. Letter S stands for specificity or specific. So when people are having consent conversations, when you are negotiating, as it were, talking about what you know is being proposed, what you may or may not consent to. Of course, you got to be informed. You know, it's got to be voluntary, but you need to specifically mention what it is you're talking about. This is kind of like a part, an extension of the informed part, but it's more so than just letting people know the potential risks and benefits. You need to name the activity. I say this to people all the time. If you can't name the activity, you probably shouldn't be proposing it or consenting to it. We're adults, and adults do adult things. And again, everything from a handshake to a hug to playing poker to having sex to tying someone to a St. Andrew's cross upside down and beating them with a spiked flogger. You have the right to have these conversations. There's nothing wrong or bad or illegal about it. But the reality is you can't consent to something if you don't know what it is. You can suggest it, but even then, you're not really consenting to things. I have always told people, you know, if you need to, when you're talking to somebody, like if you don't know them very well, it's okay to like use actual explicit words, anatomical things. Just make sure it's clear. You know, I get annoyed when people, like grown adults, are having conversations about, for example, sex and sexuality or PIV sex, and they say things like hoo-ha. I remember asking someone, what the fuck is a hoo-ha? Like, what on earth does that mean?
What part are you talking about? Part of the female, I assume, genitalia is the hoo-ha,
right? Like, you
or
know,
is it the whole assembly? I don't know.
We use this as like speak to children, and it's like, but we're right adults, though.
Like, yeah, like
we can
again,
say vagina, we can say yes, penis.
You know? Can say vagina, vulva, penis, clitoris. I mean, you can say it's okay. Like the world doesn't end when you have these conversations. Not to mention the fact that again. You know, the way I approach consent negotiations is I'm trying to minimize misunderstandings. Well, you could fuck something up if you call something a hoo-ha and someone doesn't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know how familiar you guys are with the swinging community, but they use a lot of euphemisms all the time. Whenever someone says, hey, do you want to go play? My question is, what are you talking about? Are we playing poker, spades, hearts, dominoes? What the fuck does that mean? And if you can't say it, I got problems with an adult that can't say what they're actually talking. What are your intentions before I enter behind this closed door with you when you're not saying something to me? Another example I'll give about this, and this is just going to explain my age, but I don't care. I'm a grumpy old man, and that's kind of the way it is. I had met somebody kind of in person, and we were chatting back and forth online, and somehow, I don't know how, because this doesn't happen for me often, I got up the courage to ask for a date. And she was like, sure, you know, let's just, you know, come to your house and Netflix and chill. And I'm like, okay, great. So a couple days before, or actually it was the day of, I messaged her to see what she wanted for dinner. And she's like, you're making dinner? And I was like, yeah. I mean, we're coming over to, like you said, Netflix and chill. So I figured I would make dinner before we watch whatever we're watching on Netflix and stuff like that. So apparently what was going on is I didn't know that Netflix and chill was a euphemism for something else. I thought I take things literal. I'm a pretty blunt, literal person. So I thought we were going to have dinner because I was hungry and I'm not going to make dinner for myself and not make it for my date. Watch Netflix and maybe chat and sit on the sofa. Like I had no other expectations. And her expectation was the sort of less literal, sort of euphemistic meaning of Netflix and chill. Now, once that was explained to me, I was like, oh, well, sure, I'm down with that. But I had no idea that that's what she meant. So it like literally, I'm just thinking Netflix and she's like showing up not wearing a whole lot, which I wasn't mad at, but it was kind of one of those, oh, wait a minute. This okay, we were on two different pages here. And the reason is because one of us didn't use pretty specific language. And so, I mean, this is how misunderstandings can happen. Now, luckily for me and everyone involved, we kind of got that worked out. But I'm one of those really, really straightforward people. And I'll tell someone in a heartbeat, I tell all my partners is, if you want me to know something, you better freaking say it. I don't pick up on subtlety very well. Like, I'm not good at that. So, I mean, it just, you have to say the words with me or else I'm not going to get it. I'm not saying I'm not an intelligent person. I just, you know, there's some things I pick up on very well and some I don't. And I really don't do subtlety well. I mean, it's got to be pretty obvious to me. although I'm getting better as I have trained to be a therapist and I've learned to read some things in people. But yeah,
I love that story. I actually had something similar happen to me once, because I'm like you, where I do take things very literally, and and I mean, when I say things, I usually mean them very literally too. Like, I was in class with somebody who I did really like. This was back when I was in college, and you know, but we were going to be studying for a test, and I asked them if they wanted to come over and study with me, and apparently, like, they thought that this was just like a pretense to lure them back to my place or something. And so when they showed up and I was like, had the books out and I had the study sheets and I was like, you know, all ready to go, they were like, what the hell? And I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, I asked you if I wanted you to come over and have sex with me, I would have asked for that. Like, you know, this is a person I actually ended up marrying, so we worked it out. But like,
you know, or I would have said study and sex. Like, I would have just actually said it. You know what I mean? It's pretty. And then unfortunately, my life, especially my dating life, is littered with stories like that. There was the one where it was a lazy Saturday morning and I woke up and was texting somebody I had been talking to, and she was laying in her bed and was just talking about how she was lonely and she's in this big old king size bed by herself. And, you know, and she's like, oh, well, my cat's here now. I was like, well, lucky cat. I was like, yeah, I wish it was somebody else with the cat. And we must have gone back and forth for like 20 and 30 minutes with her, quote unquote, dropping hints. And I was like, you know, well, yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's sometimes it's just nice to lay in bed on a Saturday morning. She's like, yeah, but I really wish I wasn't alone in this bed by myself. And I was like, yeah, you know, sometimes it's nice to not be alone in the bed. But hey, you know, I mean, it's just like, I didn't get it. And eventually she's like, okay, I'm going to try this one more time. And I'm like, try what? Because, of course, I'm just clueless. She literally, and I'm not kidding, wrote to me in the text, quote, I hereby cordially invite you to come over to cuddle and have sex with me in my bed right now. So that time I got what she was trying to say. And she lives 45 minutes. Like, she lives about 45 minutes away, and I was there in 32 minutes. I mean, I was like, okay, see, now I got it. Like, that part made me. She's like, okay, great. I was afraid I was going to have to, like, you know, use like semaphore or, you know, landing plane lights or something next. And I was like, you just have to use language that is pretty. I mean, I'm
just
not
use the again, words.
Yeah,
I'm, just actually ask for the thing that you want. Right. And again, I think that this is also a cultural thing. I think that people who are like, you know, like what gendered as women or whatever, like, mm-hmm. are definitely discouraged a lot of times from, like, there's a lot of social pressure that seems to say that, like, and this is of course changing, but it seems to say that, like, being enthusiastic about sex, being into sex, you know, or whatever, it's not acceptable. It's not, like, you know, so even to, like, ask for that, I think can be like a hurdle too, which is another problem with our culture and why we don't have a consent culture yet.
Yeah. I mean, it is cultural, and yeah, it's probably changing a little bit. Not that much though. I mean, if you've seen dating sites, there's still people that are really kind of, there's a lot of them that are kind of old fashioned and stuff. And I'm not mad at, you know, people and sort of their beliefs and things. I just don't understand how in a world of information that adults can't just use plain language with each other. And again, if people talk about, well, it takes away the romance and it takes away the mood or whatever other excuse they use for not actually just using words, none of them make any sense to me. Like, I don't get it. But for me, I think it really is a mood killer if somebody has a complete misunderstanding about something and ends up in a very, very embarrassing moment, or worse, in the back of a police car. See, that's a problem to me. That would be a mood killer. That would be a reason to have just said, couldn't you have just said the words instead of having me assume one thing when you meant another, or vice versa? So, yeah, that's why specificity is so important. And again, it's not only can you not consent to something if you don't know what it is, you have to specifically know what it is, or else you're consenting to the wrong thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So before we move on, Deep City had his story too, and I'm just kind of curious if you want to share.
Real quick. Just the phrase on Netflix and chill. This was, I was like, I told a girl that at work like 10 years ago or whatever, whenever Netflix was like new and hot, and not like now when they're kind of like shitty, but it's no good. But I didn't know what Netflix and chill meant. I literally thought it's just, you want to come over to my house and watch fucking Netflix. I got a Netflix account. We can watch like Planet Earth and shit. And she just like laughed at me and like walked away. And like for years, I had no idea why. It's like, oh, because it means it didn't have fuck.
Right.
Still damn mean it. That she laughed at you and walked away instead of being saying no thank you or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, people exactly. I just thought, I was like, oh shit.
Right.
know.
yeah. And I have kept myself awake at night trying to think of all the times that somebody was actually saying something that I didn't understand and I just missed it. Cause I'm like, yeah, if I start going down that rabbit hole, you know, I'll be gone for weeks. Cause there's no telling how much stuff has been said to me without actually saying it. And I'm just like, yeah. So, yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I am just a very, very blunt advocate for listen, just freaking I don't care if you got to write it down, but you have to communicate it to me clearly, expecting me to pick up on hints that I don't even necessarily know are dropping. I'm the guy that doesn't know when he's being flirted with, for crying out loud. So
same.
Like, yeah. Literally have been at a function and had one of my partners, who's the greatest wing woman in the world, tell me that somebody else was flirting with me, and then I said no she's not. She's like, yeah, no, she really is. Like, we got into an argument over whether or not somebody else was flirting with me, and of course they were obviously flirting with me. I just am not very good at picking up on those things. So yeah, I have just kind of had to learn to, that's a handicap that I have and I have to sort of deal with it, you know? So, yeah, it's a bit of a disability, but.
And also on the flip side, you know, folks that are listening and you might've had experiences where you think that you've dropped obvious hints and been rejected. That might not have been the case. It might've just been that the person didn't understand what you wanted because you weren't asking clearly enough.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And you know,
and if you have an interesting story like that and would like it to be read on out loud, please email us at smutsup. Please, I want to read them.
Yes, we love hearing your stories always. So yes.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Oh, I have so many stories. Anyway, never mind. This isn't about me. Or maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, it is an interview with you, so
I mean, you're here, so it's sort of
yeah. So many stories. Yeah. No, just there was that time I was at a polyamory convention and a really, really beautiful woman was talking to me and like was smiling and I was like all excited. And so I kept going to the right to check in with my other partner and tell her, hey, the really pretty girl's talking. She's like, I know, you should go over there and talk to her. So I was like talking to her and she's like, I really like consent. It really turns me on. I'm like, cool. I happen to be a consent educator. And like, I wasn't getting, you know, I wasn't picking up what she was laying down. And at one point she says to me, it's okay. You can relax. My feet are pointed at you. And I'm like, oh yes, they are. Nice shoes. Like it just, I was just so freaking clueless. And so at one point my girlfriend comes over and she's like, babe, no, seriously, just relax and talk to her. She's obviously interested in you. So I'm like, oh, so at that point I got it. So then I got up, you know, girded up myself and got as eloquent as I could. And I go, hi, you're pretty. Like that was what I came up with. That's what I had because I'm so freaking awkward. Yeah, it was. Oh man,
that happened to me too. So I understand.
Yeah,
I'm terrible at that.
That's what I
could, hi, like. You're pretty is not a horrible thing for somebody to hear, though. I don't think.
I mean, but literally. You know, the volume increased by factor 10. I'm not kidding you. My face cracked, even though it's been like 30 some odd years since puberty, or my voice cracked. Listening back to myself saying that, I'm like, my God, I did that, didn't I? And of course I did, because I didn't just do it. I did it in a room full of witnesses, so I couldn't deny it if I wanted to. And it's just like,
I can't rewrite my own history.
Yeah, it's like,
you're never to see it.
Damn it. I can never get that moment back. So, yeah, it was just.
I've been there several times. I am quite awkward myself. So, I feel your pain.
So, one of the things I used to do years back was I was one of the facilitators for the polyamory peer discussion group, where we used to just kind of help educate people through discussing polyamory and stuff. And I'm always fond of saying to people that, listen, polyamorous people are not necessarily better communicators. We just have to do more of it. That doesn't mean we're necessarily good at it. So I always tell people, I'm not an expert just because I've been practicing polyamory for, at this point, about 15 years. It's not that I'm that good at it. I've just done a lot more of the stuff. So trust me, I've made a lot more mistakes and I've got a lot more embarrassing moments than most people because of my own awkwardness and stuff. And so that was one of them. Like, I was trying to, I guess, be smooth, which was the mistake number one, because I just know better. So now I just kind of own up to it and I just walk into things expecting to be awkward. Like, I will tell somebody, listen, I'm probably going to be awkward to a factor of like 6 on our first date. Just be prepared and bear with me. Okay. So yeah. Yep. Yeah. We don't necessarily communicate better. We just have to do it more. That's just sort of, it's built in. So.
Anyway. And I like that, you know, just sort of calling it out. I try to do that too sometimes. I get a lot of like social anxiety, and sometimes just letting people know, like, look, I'm feeling super anxious right now. Like, that sort of takes a lot of the power away from that feeling too, just to sort of call it out. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why I went to grad school at the University of Houston to be a social worker. You know, the great Dr. Brené Brown teaches there. And reading in her books, the whole concept of leaning into the awkward, where you just own it, and it doesn't necessarily make it easier, but it takes a little bit of the bite out of it. You know, and I'll literally say, listen, this is going to be awkward, but I just would like to know if it is okay to kiss you. And by the way, no is a perfectly acceptable answer. I just wanted to know if that was okay, and let them say what they're going to say. But at that point, you've just kind of done it and admitted it. But I've learned that it's easier, or rather not even easier, it's more effective to just admit that this is going to be awkward and then do it anyway, because the awkward isn't going to go away, at least not for me. I've got a partner that I have been with now for 3 years. Love her to death. She's freaking amazing. And I still get kind of awkward and giddy and clam up a little bit around her because she's so freaking amazing. And at this point, like, she's been in my house. I've been to her house. She's met my family. Like, you know, we are in each other's lives. And there's still a bit of me that is that, you know, shy kid that can't believe pretty girls are talking to him. So, yeah,
are just really impressive. I totally get it.
I mean, yeah, you just, I'm fortunate. I've got really, really good partners in my life. So,
oh yeah.
I put a D20 in my mouth.
So we've got one more pillar of consent. Yes, we do. We have T. Yes, the timed one. This is a fun one because, and literally the T just means timed, because there's a couple different ways of looking at it. So number one, the timed factor of consent is linear. And what I mean by that is it only goes in one direction. So I mentioned, alluded to it earlier, but you have to get consent for something before you do it. It doesn't work in reverse. Like, again, you don't grab someone's ass at a party and then say, hope it was okay to do that. Because number one, no, it wasn't okay to do that. And now you have officially been the asshole by not giving somebody the opportunity to do that. Another example of this is, actually this happened on social media. There was a Facebook group at one point. There was a group of local polyamorous people. And one of the female members of the group had posted a picture of her laying in a tanning bed. And in the comment section, some male person went on a paragraphs long tirade about how he thought it was terrible for her to be laying in a tanning bed, and it was, you know, because of skin cancer, da, 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 da. And by the way, you're really, really pretty, and you know, even, oh, he said, you're really, really pretty even for a somewhat thick girl. And he says, you know, and some thick girls shouldn't be wearing big bikinis, but yours doesn't look bad on you and all this other stuff. And literally the last sentence was, I hope it's okay to say all that now.
Fuck you. Sorry, I'm really mad.
Well, you see, Deep, this is why I like you already, because I basically had the same, like, I was standing up screaming at my laptop when I saw this, because there's a couple of issues here. One, first of all, to ask after writing the fucking paragraph if it's okay to make all these comments, first of all, the answer is no, dickhead. It's not all right. But here's the problem with that. You've already done it. Now, in order for her to call out the consent violation, now she's got to be the asshole and say, look, you're a dickhead. Or she can just let it go, which tends to happen a lot. Rather than cause a stir or make a fuss or cause a problem, so many people just let shit go after it's done. The issue with that is, if you let stuff go, and I'm not blaming the victim here, but if you let it go, it encourages motherfuckers like that to do it again. Mm-hmm. So by basically doing the thing without ever asking if he could do it, one, again, it's a coercion. He's taken away the ability for her to say no. Asking if he could do it afterwards, I guess that for him is comforting, that maybe, well, I asked permission, but he did it afterwards. But now you force her to be the one that has to essentially be the police of the consent violation and point it out, or just let it go. And it's really, really shitty. So you have to get consent before you do something. It does not work in reverse. That's the first part of the whole timed pillar. The other thing is, when you are discussing things or proposing things, whenever you're having a negotiation for whatever activity it will be, let's use the example of a hug again. If you don't specifically mention a time frame for that activity that you're consenting to, you have to assume that the current one is the only one. Let me break that down. So it's like this. If one of you says to me, Zach, can I have a hug? And I'm like, okay, sure. We hug, we let go, end of hug. That's it. 30 minutes later, you do not have perpetual Zach hug privileges. We didn't mention a time. Now, if I see
lifetime Zach hug.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, if I see you at a conference or something like that, it's like, hey, can I have a hug? Sure. And you know what? Don't ask me again for the rest of the weekend. I like hugs. I'm here to be hugged. Come hug me. By the way, I've never done this with anybody. But if I do that, that's what that means. By all means, go for it. Come hug. Right. But if I specifically, you know, give you a time to say for the rest of this week, and that's fine. You don't have like the perpetual consent to do that. And we laugh about this now with the example of a hug, but how many people do we know have been in relationships with somebody for 5-10 years and just assume they can do whatever they want because it was consented to before? Well, look, asshole, you had sex last night. That doesn't give you consent to do it first thing this morning. I don't care if they are in your bed. People have the right to say no for any damn reason. Again, not a big hugger. I once went to a Christmas party that was a big polyamorous Christmas party held at somebody's house up here. And I'm always grumpy around Christmas because it's like right before my birthday. And I'm usually pissed off that people care more about Jesus' birthday than mine. Anyway, so I go to the party. Yeah, I walk in. The hostess is, you know, already 4 or 5 cups in. Hey, Zach, she gives me a big hug. Hey, it's good to see you. Whatnot. I kind of hang out and I'm doing my thing and I'm hanging out, trying to be social as best I can as an introvert. You know, about 90 minutes later, I'm done. I'm ready to go. So I start to walk out. She goes to hug me and I'm not in the mood. I just, I don't want to be hugged. And I was like, nah, it's okay. She's like, well, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing. I just don't want to be hugged right this moment. And the reality is I have the right to not be hugged. You don't know if I just got a call that said my mom died and I don't want to, you know, entertain your right to be drunk and a social butterfly. I have the right to choose not to later on, you know, and people need to understand that once consent is given, it's not a commodity. It's not like gold where you get to keep it forever. You've got the badge of, well, that person gave me consent back in 2006. I get to keep it from now on. I have consent to hereby grab that ass forever. Unless they flat out say that, you don't. And people need to understand that. Not to mention the fact is, even if you do give someone, I hate this term, but we'll use it anyway, quote unquote, blanket consent in perpetuity, they can always take it away for any reason. There doesn't need to be a reason that's acceptable to you, because the person who gave the consent has the right to take it away at any time, period. And so that's sort of the timed aspect of consent, is that one, it moves linearly, and two, it can always be withdrawn. You know, there is rarely perpetual consent given. And even then, it's kind of fragile because it can be taken away. It isn't something that once you have forever. And again, these things seem very basic and common, but I cannot tell you the number of times I've had people argue with me about this stuff just because of, for whatever reason, that they just basically think they don't have to go through the actual effort of actually getting consent before doing whatever they want to do. So there we are. That's your 5 pillars.
All right. Well, fuck yeah. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Yeah.
So we've talked a lot in this conversation about, like, you know, consent culture and how we don't really have it. I think there's a lot of places we could point to where, you know, just living in the kind of society that we live in, where there's so much advertising and stuff, there's so many things that are trying to really be very, make us have, like, not great boundaries, I think would be one way of saying it. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to kind of push against this? And what actionable items might we be able to, like, tackle in order to help move towards more of a consent culture?
Oh, wow. That was an easy question. Let me see. Well, because the thing is, if you think about it, you're talking about changing a culture that, let's be honest, has existed since ever. Like, one of the things I sometimes say in my consent workshops is, if human history is somewhere between 10 to 20,000 years old, the consent conversation isn't something that we've kind of messed up. Like, we've dropped the ball. We never really picked it up. So much of human history has been essentially the survival of the fittest, the power rule all. And it's been, you know, basically a set of force equations. When you start trying to take force out of the equation, you know, where you're actually having intelligent conversations, I think it's the next sort of step in evolution, is where we're respecting people's volition as opposed to, I'm stronger than you and I can make you do what I want to do. So changing a basic, inherent, built-in cultural thing, not easy. I will say this. I think it can be done. I'm not delusional. I'm in my mid-40s, and I don't know that I'll ever in my lifetime be able to say I live in a consent culture. But as I learned years ago, I can't not try. So one is with example, like, you know, with everything. I do consent practice every single day in about every way I can. And I'm not 100% perfect. I'm better than most, I think, because I think about it so actively. So it's little things, like if I am flirting with somebody new, or, well, I don't really flirt, but chatting with somebody new that I like, and, you know, via Messenger or something like that, and they text me a photo of them because they want to show me the picture of them. Hey, that's a great photo of them. I do things like, hey, is it okay with you if I save that picture? You know, and I get people shocked. They're like, oh, well, no one's ever asked me that before. And I was like, okay, think about what that means. That means is that you send a photo to somebody and they just assume because you sent them a photo, they have the right to keep it forever and ever. Amen. Or until the Russians hack into their server. Like, it's not my photo. You shared a photo with me because you wanted me to see it. I'm going to ask for your permission to keep it. And I will let you know that no one else will ever see this photo without your consent, express explicit consent for me to show that photo. Thank you for sending it to me. May I keep it? And I do this. I've got people that I've been in relationships with for years who I ask consent if they can keep their photos, and they'll ask consent to send them. You know, I got one of my partners now, beautiful woman, will say, hey, do you have any problems with me sending you a PG-13 photo? I'm like, the answer to that will always be no. By all means, send it. But thank you for asking, because I really appreciate that. Right. So a couple of things is, one, practice it in small ways as much as possible anytime you can. Two, when you see other people practicing what we would consider consent cultures or consent-minded things, make a point of recognizing it and sort of encouraging the behavior. So again, if someone asks me before they send me a photo, I always say, thank you for asking. If someone asks me before hugging, I always say, thank you for asking, because so many people don't do that, you know? So I think, as opposed to trying to think of major big ways that we can change this stuff, little things. One of the things I tell people who, and I mentioned it earlier, who are parents all the time is like, you guys have got to start young. I mean, you've got to start it because, again, you know, it doesn't take long for a 5-year-old to figure out how to bully somebody into doing what he wants if he can just hit them or throw something or throw a tantrum or stuff like that. At the same time, you know, little things like I had a partner at one point that had a 4-year-old that used to like to climb on the dog's back. You know, well, sometimes the dog was okay with it and sometimes they weren't. And, you know, you learn to teach your kids to understand phrases like my body, my choice. You know, if they're not enjoying it, stop doing it. But you don't just get to take because the dog can't say no to you. That's not cool. Not to mention the fact that you wouldn't want them to do that to you. So those are a couple of little ways. You know, one is, I think, really working on the next generation. Two is having the conversation. But little things like handshakes. You know, again, grew up down here in the South. You, someone sticks their hand out to shake your hand and you walk away without shaking their hand. I mean, for fuck's sake, you know, we in the Deep South, this is, those are fighting words. You know, people pull guns on you. Yeah, you know,
get very offended about that stuff.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. They get really nasty about that. And I mean, what does that mean? You know, I mean, seriously, not to mention the, and again, here I go being a geek again. You know, there's a whole lot of microbes and germs that can be transferred via handshakes. By the way, we just went through, or we're still going through, an entire global pandemic because human beings are gross. I kind of feel like it's okay for me to not be touched by you. Like, yeah. I'm okay with, you know, enforcing my 6-foot rule, period. You know?
Yeah. We have other like non-touch greetings like waving or something, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Dude, fist bump me and you know what? Meet me at the hand sanitizer dispenser, then fist bump me. Something. There's gotta be ways we can do this. But you know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's crazy. It really is just nuts. The type of stuff that is out there. And again, it's because this consent stuff, this agreeing to do things or not do things, what we do allow and what we don't allow, or, you know, are sort of okay with participating in, happens every day in so many interactions that we just don't think about. It's because we've glossed them over. You know, we just went through the 5 pillars of consent, and I tell people all the time, what you may not be aware of is that you're doing those, whether you know it or not. In many ways, it's kind of implied. I just want people to sort of keep it more explicit in their minds and realize it's the process you're going through. And by the way, if you skip a step, you might want to check yourself, because skipping one of those steps usually leads to significant, you know, if not a, you know, very blatant consent violation in one way or another. And ask yourself, why? How did this get skipped? Did I just forget to do it? You know, or something like that. So yeah, those are kind of ways we can go about, I think, working on building a consent culture. So
this has just been awesome. Like, I've been like, I'm sorry for like being quiet, but it's, I kind of do feel like the adults are talking, and I just, this is a great way for me to like just like learn. A lot of me too is like reflecting on my past relationships, and maybe I might have skipped a step, but this gives me more of a thing of like how I can improve in the future.
Yeah. So if I may, that's another thing that I think about when I talk about trying to build a consent culture. People have asked me before, as a consent educator, have I ever violated consent? My answer is, I'm sure I have. You know, now, can I think specifically of a time right now top of my head? Maybe, maybe not. But you don't live in this world without having at some point made a mistake. I'm not saying that I'm perfect, that anybody is perfect, and nobody's really perfect. So the other thing that I would say is that it's important to be able to talk about this stuff, but it's got to be okay to say, hey, I fucked this up. I would like to make this right or not do that again, or at least acknowledge it and apologize and move on. I think something that happens a lot is whenever there are what we would consider consent violations, depending on, I don't like to call them degrees because trauma is trauma to the trauma victim, no matter what the degree is. But some people like to say that some things are so bad that you should basically be canceled from all of life in perpetuity. And some things are what they like to call less significant or minor consent violations. And I'm not one of those people. I kind of think that if you violated consent, you violated consent. Apologizing for it doesn't necessarily make it better. But I think acknowledging it, more importantly, is, you know, committing to doing better in the future and the next time. And so more so than apologizing for the sake of the person whose consent you violated, it's for you, the recognition that, hey, I'm not perfect and I got work to do. But it needs to be okay to have that conversation. I kind of feel like people who walk through life saying anybody who's ever violated anyone's consent in any way, by definition, you know, sort of forfeits the right to be a human being in this society, creates a problem, because now we have people that are so afraid to ever admit to having not been 100% perfect when it comes to consent that they'll flat out lie about it. And I'm like, well, listen, it's okay to admit that maybe I didn't do this the right way. You know, that's fine. We're not trying to erase you from the face of the earth, but we do need you to acknowledge that this wasn't cool and to at least try to work on doing better and then actually do the damn work. It's not just lip service. Sometimes you have to do the damn work. And if that means, okay, taking a break from visiting this group for a while or staying away from a person who maybe is now uncomfortable around you because you skipped some steps when dealing with them. I think it needs to be okay to talk about consent and consent violations and to be okay to not be perfect about that, as long as we're working towards getting better. I'm more about the progress than the perfection. Mm-hmm. You know, and it takes work.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very relieving to hear, because that often happens a lot where it's like you have to be like perfect and never on your record ever had like any incident happen. But I mean, you know, we're all humans, but I could have been better. And that's why I just love hearing this, because like, okay, I can now bring this into my life and try to be a better person.
You know? Yeah. The colonists are no longer coming after you with pitchforks. Right. I mean, and by the way, I have, like I said, for a while there was a facilitator of various polyamory groups, and I've done various kink things and whatnot. And I've been involved in situations where consent was violated and I was considered a leader of whatever that group or, you know, organization was. And I'm one of those people where, okay, listen, something has come up, or we've been made aware of a consent violation. We go to the person and say, hey, this has come up, or maybe you made this person uncomfortable. For me, at that point, a lot of the response of the individual who is being told that they may have violated someone's consent is very important. If the immediate response is completely negative, to completely deny it and call everyone else on the planet a liar, because they're obvious, as opposed to, hey, is it possible that maybe you did something that made somebody uncomfortable? Can we at least acknowledge that without it being in the end of the world? Like, I don't instantly come at somebody with, you know, the torches, the pitchforks, and the machetes. But if your response is to double down on being an asshole, see, now I don't have much use for you. Because again, I'm, as an educator and a person, trying to live in a more consent-minded culture, and your response is, nope, I'm perfect, everyone else is lying. And it's like, okay, at this point, now are you not only an accused consent violator, you're also being a dick. You know, at a minimum, understand there is this person here who at least feels violated. Can we at least show a tiny bit of compassion for that? Even if you honestly believe it wasn't you, you know, because I'm not saying it's not, you know, and I've seen people have that happen where somebody, you know, either made an accusation or something like that, believed it was one person. Clear evidence showed that it was not, like, we have black and white evidence that it was not them. And then the response of that person who was falsely accused was to say, okay, well, now I want to get revenge on my accuser. It's like, okay, whoa, hold on a second. Okay, you have the opportunity, now that you've been exonerated, to move on with your life. You do not have to choose schmuckdom. Don't be a dick just because you think you can. Because the reality is, we still have somebody whose consent was violated. All right? and is confused because they, you know, accused the wrong person. Yeah, they accused the wrong person and they have to live with that. But there's still someone who was hurt. And if your response is to be an asshole because they shouldn't have come after you and your response then is revenge, okay, you weren't a dick before. Now you really kind of are, you know, well, and I just don't have a lot of use for that. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's an opportunity to, you know, it seems like the more appropriate response would be like, okay, well, you know, that certainly wasn't me, but let me help you figure out who it maybe was or something, mm-hmm. if I can, or, you know, like the constructive way to go would be like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, things like that, and just, you know, being willing to have those conversations that are, let's be honest, they're not always comfortable conversations. This isn't an easy conversation we've had. Now, we've made light of it and had some fun with it because it's reality. And I really commend you for bringing this onto your podcast because, you know, like I said, when I started doing this stuff 5-6-ish, whatever many years ago, people didn't want to talk about this and they still don't. You know, I've been on various either podcasts or websites and stuff like that where, or I've gone to the convention where they're talking about all these other fun stuff. You know, it's kind of hard to be, look at the schedule of the conference and one person is, you know, doing flogging and one person is doing rope and another person is literally doing a fisting demo. And then there's this guy over here talking about consent. I know what I would want to go to. You know, it's a hard conversation to have. It's a hard sell, but it's very, very critically important. And not to mention the fact that if we get the consent conversation right or get to a point where we are in more of a consent culture and we're more consent minded, all those other things are a lot more fun. But people don't think of it that way. It's just, well, I don't want to talk about consent. One, I think I understand consent intrinsically, which I find hilarious because we don't live in a consent culture. Nobody understands consent intrinsically. They think they do, and they probably know when their consent's been violated, but they don't understand the way it interacts everybody else. It's just critically important. And so I'm always grateful when people are okay having this conversation and let alone bringing me on, because I know I talk loud, I talk fast, and I'm very passionate about this stuff. So it's hard to shut me up, but yeah.
Well, no, you are the perfect podcast guest, actually. Yeah.
It's content.
Right? So, and yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. This is absolutely fantastic. And is there anything that we didn't ask you about, which you would like to mention or talk about?
Oh, geez. We don't really have time to go into it, but I would encourage people to check out the NCSF's Consent Counts Project and the work that they've done with the American Legal Institute. It's primarily, or yeah, American Law Institute. Primarily, they're looking at trying to find ways to codify and redefine consent in the law or in potential law in the future that allows for the consensual adult participation in kinky activities. Because the problem is, for years up until, well, very recently, and actually up until recently, because not all these laws have changed, if someone was to interact in some sort of kink play, let's say it's just a simple impact play scene where somebody's tied to a cross and being beaten with a flogger, if the law gets a hold of that activity, it always treats it like violent assault. Like, literally, you could be charged with assault for tying somebody that you care about up to a cross and beating them with a flogger. That was always a problem before. So there have been some efforts afoot to sort of try and change that and try to make room for the participation and the willing consensual participation in those things. And it's called, you know, explicit prior consent or explicit prior permission, EPP. But all that's involved in what the NCSF is working on now. It's a big part of what they're doing now. And it's one of the things that I've been asked to travel around a couple different places around the country and talk about, because it's under the new project. So wish there was another hour and a half to go deep dive into that. But yeah, it's sort of a new thing that's coming out. So I would recommend people go check out the website, ncsffreedom.org, and take a look. If you want to add my email to show notes, hit me up with questions, because I love talking about this stuff. So,
oh, yes, absolutely. We will put all the links and stuff into the show notes. And yeah, I was going to say, that does sound like a fascinating topic. Maybe sometime, if you wouldn't mind coming back and speaking with us again about it, that might be
absolutely
really cool. Okay.
And myself, or I've got a partner of mine who knows a lot about this stuff as well. She's also a consent educator. She's also on the board for NCSF. And yeah, it's something that literally we just got a call today to go. I think we'll be in Fort Lauderdale in October at a conference there talking about this stuff. So yeah, it's kind of what we do. So yeah, I'd be happy to do it again.
Okay, fantastic. Very nice. Thank you. Yeah. Do you have any questions for us?
Gosh, I can't think of any off the top of my head. I, like I said, I'm just grateful to have been here and had the conversation with you guys because I really enjoy this. So, but just so you know, I don't have anywhere I have to go. So if you want to talk a little bit more or have any other questions or, you know, just shoot the shit about this stuff, I can literally talk about this consent stuff for hours. So no, other than that, I don't have any questions. I will let people know, as far as me personally, side projects that I'm doing other than, like I said, my, what I call my muggle job working as a social worker. I do polyamory consulting and coaching on the side. I also do consent coaching. And so a lot of that is working with either individuals or couples to understand their own sort of journeys as far as polyamory goes. And, you know, like I said, I'm not an expert in it, but I've made more mistakes than a lot of people. So I kind of know how to sort of help and what to look for and how to kind of either set the boundaries you need or have those conversations. So I do a lot of that. I can be contacted via email for that stuff. Another one of the things that I'm adamant at teaching about is radical self-care. And so I do a lot of self-care consent and I'm sorry, self-care coaching and self-care consulting and just kind of helping people in their day-to-day lives sort of make self-care a priority because it needs to be a priority for everyone, whether they know it or not, particularly the people who think they don't have time for self-care. They're usually the ones that need the most of it. So that's another thing that I do on the side. And yeah, it's another workshop I teach. And by the way, happy to talk about that one as well. So
I love that. Yeah, self-care is definitely an important topic. I sort of consider a lot of my sexual practices to be self-care oriented. And so
good. Excellent. Cool. So no, other than that, I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Well, yes, this has been fantastic. This has given me so much to think about. I mean, gosh, just there's so many different complicated ways that, you know, power and authority is distributed in all human interactions, and it always complicates things. And when we talk about consent, I think it's important to sort of like bring that understanding into it too. Like, and so, yeah, there's so much to think about. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I don't pretend at all that it's a small or, you know, minute or, you know, tiny topic, which is why, like I said, I don't mind talking about it, you know, over and over again, multiple times. And, you know, not a lot changes in it. Sometimes there's new understandings or new ways of looking at it or new developments. But I just happen to have either the foresight or the fortune to become a consent educator right before the current iteration of the Me Too movement came out. And so it's a conversation that I have a lot, and I'm very okay with that. Like I said, I want this to be a consent culture at some point, and we'll do everything I can in my lifetime to make it so.
Hell yeah. And like I said before, like I, you know, I went in here like, I know what consent is, you know, but do I, you know, like, and I just wanted to, like, you know, get more information on it. And yeah, it's nothing like I thought it was. Like, it's a lot more in depth, but it's not hard, you know. That's the one weird thing about it. It's like, no, it's not hard. You just have to have, you know, maybe difficult conversations that depending on, you know, like I'm a huge introvert as well. I'm also hugely awkward, and my main hobby is dissociating, so yeah. plenty of that. Yeah. No, it's just it this is one of those, like, I was already thinking halfway through, I was like, I'm gonna listen to this like multiple times because like this has a lot of really good information.
Oh, awesome.
It's really good to have like this refreshed, like, honestly, like,
yeah,
if this is a class, like, you need to be paid for it.
I do not disagree with you. I'm cool with that. So yeah, no, it's this is important stuff. Like I said, I love having these conversations. I, spoiler alert, and kind of working on like the next sort of iteration, the next step, sort of a consent 201 or 202 about it. I will say this is sort of the last thing that I mentioned here before taking up too much time, is that I challenge anyone who's hearing this to go through their lives and try to find ways in which consent is involved in the interactions they're having, particularly with other people. And, you know, things that you haven't thought of before, because there's things that are obvious, but then there's things that maybe you haven't considered or thought of before. And, you know, when you start to realize that and realize that consent is involved in pretty much every interaction you have with another human being, that's a big step towards realizing that, you know, consent is so critical to the human experience that, you know, we have to be more consent minded as a culture, as a society, and as a species. So yeah, that's going to be my sort of call to action there, is just, you know, find the consent iterations in your everyday life. Just be aware of them. That's the beginning. Just be aware of them. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, let's leave it there on those very powerful words. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
No problem. No problem at all. Thank you for having me.
But only if you want it.
Only as deep as you want it.
Only as deep as you want it.
All right, that's enough.
So fine.
You see, I feel like it's transformed.
Deep.
And so where it's like, oh man, yeah. Like,
deep, deep. Be a better person,
so yeah, that was a wonderful interview by Zach B. We thank you very much for having him on. And like, I don't know if you guys like, you know, like it he was very, like you said in the intro, very charismatic, very comfortable to speak with. And I could listen to him talk for hours, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. It was super great talking with Zach. And yeah, hopefully he'll be willing to come back and talk to us again sometime soon.
Oh, yeah.
So do you have any closing thoughts or anything like that? Or is there anything that you wanted to mention before we button up the fly of this episode?
Wait, before we put it back in our pants?
Can you still get like flies that are buttons instead of zippers? Is that still a thing?
I've never owned anything like that. That wasn't boxers. You know, like I don't have a pair of pants that is like a button fly. I've also never owned those like red prospecting long johns with the buttons on, with like the flap on the butt. I think those went out of style. I'm not sure you can get those anymore.
So the idea there is that you can use the bathroom without having to take your underpants off?
Yeah, because apparently like there's no AC back in the Pioneer days, and there's no like really insulation in an outhouse. So it's like if you gotta use the bathroom at night, it gets cold out in the prairie, so like, you know, you want to still, you know, be all cozy and everything, and you unplug it for, you know, a quick evacuation. Or could be a butt sex thing. Who knows?
Not mutually exclusive, obviously.
Not mutually exclusive, but I'm sure it could be used for that. And there was a lot of lonely cowboys on the frontier, so I don't see why not.
I'm guessing you could probably still get long johns, but I'm guessing that people probably, it's probably more of a butt sex thing now than it was, because like, yeah, you know, we have indoor plumbing and stuff now. So, or I don't know, maybe it's just a convenience thing for folks. Like, so if you're into wearing long johns with a little butt flap, please write to us and tell us about it and explain to us like what about it you like, because I'm curious. That's all.
Yeah, that's all. And they have to be that like red itchy kind. Anyways, we're way off topic. What I wanted to say though is like, I did kind of, as he was speaking, I did kind of notice a lot of my past relationships that I might have maybe had a consent violation, and like I immediately kind of like shut down within myself. Was like, oh god, I'm not perfect, and it was like a really awkward situation, and I feel shitty. A lot of people will feel that way too, but it's important to have that conversation so you can move ahead and move on and like, you know, be a better person in your life. Because like I go through a lot of issues with that myself, where it's like I look back on something, I'm like, no, probably wasn't appropriate to do in the conversation, or it's like I can't, you know, or it's like I gave her a hug and she didn't, you know, she seemed really like weird about it, so maybe, you know, maybe I did something wrong. So it's like, you know, it's okay to kind of have that conversation like with yourself as well. And like, you know, it's a lot of things learned are usually from trauma, unfortunately, like usually like a big lesson. So like, in order for that not to happen though, like I really do feel like this, the invest model he used, it's one of those, I'll be listening to it like over and over again, just to like refresh myself if I get back out into the dating scene, because I think it's just really important for everybody to kind of get on board with this. So maybe one day we can be a consent culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what you said makes a lot of sense. And thank you for sharing that. Like, as Zach mentioned, this conversation, this even concept of consent it's a new thing in as far as we understand in human thought and culture and stuff. And so, of course, we're still trying to figure it out. And of course, people are going to fuck up and make mistakes. And everybody can think back in the past and, you know, maybe not, as Zach said, think of very specific examples, but just through not understanding the situation, making mistakes and, you know, violating people's trust or their consent on accident, you know? And so, yeah, the only thing that we can do is try to do better and try to really keep those lines of communication open. And as Zach said, give a lot of positive reinforcement when it's happening. Say, yes, thank you. Thank you for, you know, I respect the fact that you're respecting my consent, and I respect, you know, to give positive reinforcement and to say, thank you so much for asking before you could send me a picture or whatever it is, you know, even if it's something small or silly. It's, I sometimes feel like people have this conception that like asking permission is can be seen as weak. And I think that that's really problematic. And it's not, because the strong thing to do is the hard thing, which is the awkward thing, which is actually getting the information, right? Like,
yeah, like I appreciate the positive reinforcement in that as well, because I'm a very nervous and finicky person. Like, anyways, I will ask people like a lot, to a point of where I think it's being annoying, but I just want to know 100% sure, is it okay if I do blank, blank, or blank? Even small things like, hey, are you absolutely sure I can come over to your house? Because I don't want to, like, you know, maybe you're into something, maybe you don't feel like, you know, seeing people today. I understand. So, like, you know, I want to know as well. And I think that positive reinforcement is a good way to like hammer it home.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, being willing, you know, having the assertiveness that we need to feel comfortable saying no. We're, as Zach pointed out, oftentimes people are trained from a very young age that it's not okay to say no in some certain circumstances, and or that there might have been like really negative reinforcement in the past or whatever. Like, and so that's, if you have been trained that it's not okay to like say no, that to retrain yourself so that it's okay for you.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I need a little refresher on how to be assertive these days, especially with like when like work is involved and all that. But that's off topic. But yeah, it's like I feel like it would be a lot stronger of a culture if people were more assertive, and they don't have to fear saying no either. Like, I feel like that's a huge thing as well. It's like a lot of people can find themselves in situations where it's like, I better say yes, or else the alternative is like something worse. And for some reason that is like hammered into our brains. Well, and I'm like, I don't know.
Zach,
why
did mention like this too, like female you know, presenting people, this is something that, yes, it does come up, you know, there's always a sort of like maybe like low-key threat that is like just in the background, just because of how our culture is. So it's just sort of like a lot of nuance to like navigate there, you know, in terms of like when will I be safe, and when will, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah,
it's like you should never feel that way. Like, I have a problem on a lot of dates myself because I'm a rather large guy. I kind of have a mean look on my face. I don't mean to, it's just my face. I have resting bitch face.
I
sometimes.
Don't know if that's true. You're adorable. That's okay though.
I don't know. I can feel my own bitch face, if that's weird. Like, I can feel it scrunching up and squinting because I'm just, well, it's usually because I don't like where I am. But just that fear, the always sunny joke of the implication, it's funny, yes, but at the same time, God, it's so fucked up. Like, it's so fucked up that like we just have that, and it just has never have gone away. And I feel bad for that. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't mean to go too much into my personal life, so I won't. But I've had situations where it's just like, I'm not a bad guy, but it's like, I feel like I should feel like a bad guy, or that they at least feel uncomfortable somehow.
And well, see, I don't think there's any such thing as a good guy or a bad guy. That's, I don't think that that's a thing. Like, that's true. Like, there's just people, and whether we're good people or bad people or whatever is defined by our actions. So, like, just assuming, like, oh, I'm a good guy or I'm a good person, therefore everything I do is good, that's very problematic.
That's
like, so
too,
if you're operating from the assumption that you're a good person, therefore what you do is good, I would invite you to definitely reexamine that, just in a general sense, like not you, just anybody, because I think that there's a lot of opportunities for introspection. And also if you're operating from the assumption like, oh, I'm a good person, like that, there's also a sort of like inherently like entitled attitude behind that too, which can also be problematic. So yeah.
Yeah. I think the term good guy has been ruined constantly now. So like you can no longer be a good guy.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. Like when you like, cause I know that this comes up, like, you know, this idea of like the good guy being somebody who's like a covert abuser, maybe, is one way of saying it.
Yeah, or it's like I see it a lot in like more of an incel community, where it's just like they are the good guy, so why aren't they going after them?
What does this good guy mean? Like, what do they mean by the good guy?
And exactly, like, what does that mean? Yeah,
like, what is bad what the guy? Fuck do you like, mean? What, by that? What are we talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So what they're really saying is I feel entitled because of who I am.
Exactly. Because of who I am, and people should give me a chance, therefore I should have everything without working for it. Which, I'm sorry to say, never fucking works, never fucking happens, and you gotta work for every goddamn thing in your life. Even to breathe, you have to work for it.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I went on a tangent, I'm so sorry.
No, that's a good point, though. Even to breathe, you have to work for it. There's no such thing as a free lunch. In the immortal words of Robert A. Heinlein, from The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
That's a hell of a plug. Holy shit.
Oh, yes,
I never knew where that was from.
Old science fiction book by a very raunchy author that wrote a bunch of weird shit about incest. But anyway.
Jesus Christ. See, I always had the quote of like, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and he's like some boomer, and like that's it. Just like some old fuck said.
Yeah, he's older than a boomer.
Anyways, we hope you enjoyed this. I hope to kind of have him back on, and if he ever makes his way back down, yeah. I want to go meet him in person. Maybe ask him for a hug, maybe not. Maybe fist bump, and then I'll hand him some Purell or something. Or just wave. I just want to wave at him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, we really appreciate Zach taking the time to, you know, to share this information that he's, you know, put so much time and research into putting together and with so much passion. And we had a great time talking about this very, as you know, as we mentioned, kind of difficult thing to talk about. So I thought that was really fucking cool. And I hope everybody listening enjoyed it very much. If you have thoughts, questions, suggestions, comments, all of that stuff, or if you would like to suggest topics for us to cover, you can reach us at...
That is smutsups... 69@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at smutsups69 as well, and we look forward to hearing from you. Yes,
absolutely.
From you.
And if you would like to ask Zach any questions or get in touch with him about any of the counseling he offers or anything like that, we will have the info to do that in the show notes.
Oh, most definitely.
So before we get on to a little bit of aftercare, let's go ahead and talk about the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. Don't miss all of the great shows that we have going on, like Administrism, Ad Hoc History, XV Planis, Faith Blind Council, Grognostics, Lux Occult, Primordia, and of course, Unearthing Paranormalcy. And you can hear this conversation in another configuration on the Lux Occult RSS feed as well, because I think it's so important. I'm going to be presenting it on both of them, so hopefully the maximum number of people that we'll be able to reach will hear it.
Oh yeah, and I like that. I was a part of a good conversation, a smart conversation. Not to say that everything else isn't, but you know, it's, you know, I just backed myself into a,
well, it was
corner
nice to
here.
Talk about something that like super matters with our platform, which we do have a lot of fun talking about, like, you know, stupid shit and the Matrix or whatever, but then it was cool to have
once
a little
a while,
bit more of a serious conversation. And
yeah, once in a while it's like I do kind of want a little education into this one, because if not, then it's just, you know, what is it, it's just, oh, hashtag so random, that's it, boo. You know, like, we can do better than that, and I want to provide people with more of an outlet for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we love to have these conversations, we love to learn, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. And so yes, thank you so much for joining us. And I feel like before we go, I should ask. I was thinking about this. I've been working on this project where I'm creating a haunted sex toy. I was wondering, should we talk about this on our show?
Yeah. I mean, we are a part of the Green Mushroom podcast. Things are kind of like, I'm just going to use the blanket term of culty. I don't see why we can't.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's definitely a topic that straddles the, you know, both of them. I just thought it might be interesting to allow you all to ask me questions about it from the standpoint of folks who aren't like into that stuff.
Straddle was a great word to use. Sorry.
Yes,
I was like, straddle. Looks a straddle. That'd be like a nice burlesque name.
Oh gosh. Okay, we're super in the weeds. This is definitely a Smuts Up episode. We're back.
Hey, we're back. But you know, before we go, I think it's very important that we do some aftercare.
Absolutely. Let's do that.
We've said this before on the show and we'll say it again. Everyone has a thing and that's okay, as long as it's consensual and legal, especially if it's consensual now.
As we learned today, like there's some weirdness surrounding like the laws about whether, you know, so that's, I mean, what we mean by legal, we're talking about like age, but you know, people who are underage cannot give consent. So all of this stuff is nuanced, and you know, that's something that is always the case with language. And just wanted to point that out because we say this all the time, right? This like the legal thing, but yeah, depending on where you are, it might I don't know, even if it's completely consensual, it might not technically be legal. So there, yeah, but the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom is doing work to help to change that so that adults can be adults without the government, whatever. Looking forward to hearing more about that. But please continue on. I apologize for interrupting our very important aftercare segment.
No, that's okay, because I'm thinking like, we might need to change up this part. Well,
these things will evolve.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, it's always evolving. Exactly. All evolve. But if you feel like your thing, whatever it is causing you problems, for instance, stuff that psychologists would consider maladaptive, like anger, self-harm, avoidance, or withdrawal, please don't hesitate to find someone to talk to. You don't need to be ashamed of it.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's sort of the same thing of like, you know, it's no stigma going to the doctor if you get sick. There's no stigma going to talk to somebody if you're having a rough time and you need help sorting it out. So yeah. Also, as we talked about at length today, consent is never optional and must be enthusiastic and ongoing, and also informed, voluntary, enthusiastic, I already said that one, specific and timed, invest, right? Okay, minors and those under the influence of intoxicants cannot legally give consent.
Yeah, not consent. And remember, no matter who you think you are right now, no matter what you look like, you deserve love and to be happy and all those good, wonderful, fluffy things. So please take care of yourself.
Absolutely. Please take care of yourself. Never a bad idea to use protection, like putting a condom on it. So please take care of yourself.
Yeah. Put a condom on it. You'll be safe. Just be safe, okay? Just put a condom on it. Just for Jesus Christ. If you put a condom on a lot of things, like it really does save you for a lot of, like, especially in my personal experience, irritation. So, you know,
I mean, it could be like cleanup issues too. Like if you're using like a fleshlight or something, if you wear a condom, you wouldn't have to like clean it up so much. I don't know.
You wouldn't have to clean it out. You can just, you know, pop it off, toss it in the trash, and go
up
about
is
your
part
day.
Of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
You wouldn't to shove things
hear
up other things.
More independent productions like the one you just listened to.
Probably
use
a condom.
Visit our catalog at TGM Podcast
or a night trial glove. Not speaking. Never a bad idea to put a glove on your hand either.
Yeah, gloves mean love.
Gloves mean love. Absolutely. Okay. What other hygienic advice should we give the listeners? No, I think they got it. All right, everybody, we love you.
I'm brushing your teeth.
Yes, brush your teeth and don't forget to floss.
Yeah. Don't forget to floss. Yeah.
And also, fuck you. Right, thanks everybody. For listening.
Hey, go fuck yourself. Put a D20. Later, fuckers. Bye, love you. You. Fuck you. Bye.
I put a D20 in my mouth.
My brand.
I put a D20 in my mouth. put a D20 in my mouth.
Welcome to XP Planners. Greetings, friends, fiends, and lovers of strange and wondrous things. My name is Flood, and I am the host of XV Planets, a bi-weekly podcast of the odd and unusual. The core of XV Planets is a documentary-style exploration into paranormal investigations that I and my ever-evolving group of magical misfits conduct. We take a look at the history, the mystery, then go see it for ourselves, and then we bring that experience, and on occasion, that evidence, to your ears. Alongside the investigations, you'll find a treasure trove of other content, like interviews with authors, art historians, mediums, UFO researchers, cryptid hunters, fellow paranormal investigators, as well as deep dives into the arts, exploring topics like the Killing Joke frontman Jazz Coleman's magical practices and how that propelled the band forward, and whether or not David Lynch was really conducting occult rituals through Twin Peaks: The Return. So follow XV Planets today and get caught up on the journey, because I can promise you, it only gets stranger from here. I'll see you on the fifth plane.
Epic history.
The Greeks are like on the beach, they're like doing burpees or something. The Persians sail up, and they've got like little spears and pomegranates and stuff, and they're like, hey, want to be part of our cool empire?
In-depth commentary.
Cutting edge expert drunken analysis. Two people that you don't know anything about.
It's ad hoc history with Asher and Luxa, siblings extraordinaire.
Hey, just real quick, like, if you were emperor, would you choose me as second emperor?
Next question.
Learning.
It's not pretty. It's not nice. And if you want to talk about justification for war and all these things, but when you get to how the sausage is actually made, this is it.
It's ad hoc history.
It's not the history podcast you wanted. It's the history podcast you deserve.